Coming up, Kim Lawton reports on the Democratic National Convention. What role did religion play? Also, Lucky Severson on the national parks, 100 years old this year, and for many visitors, not only beautiful, but holy.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. This week of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, our managing editor Kim Lawton was there looking at what influence faith and religion had. Here is Kim's report.
And so, my friends, it is with humility, determination, and boundless confidence in America's promise that I accept your nomination for President of the United States.
As Hillary Clinton became the first woman to accept a major party's nomination for U.S. president, faith leaders were among those moved by the historical significance of the moment.
That this day has come is a tribute to all the women that went before us.
Sister Simone Campbell is leader of the network lobby's Nuns on the Bus Project, a group of Catholic sisters who traveled by bus to both conventions advocating for economic justice. Here in Philadelphia, they got permission to park their bus inside the security perimeter next to the convention arena. In both cities, they pulled wagons through the streets, passing out lemonade and initiating conversations about key issues.
The income and wealth disparity in our nation that's tearing us apart, the anger, the fear, the judgmentalness, the racism that we've seen in our country, it's tearing holes in the fabric of our society. Can we step together into a future as opposed to pulling apart for partisan gain?
The nuns were part of the large number of religious representatives who came to Philadelphia this week to speak out for their values and beliefs. In recent decades, Democrats have battled the perception that they are not favorable toward religion. Democratic Convention Committee CEO Leah Daughtry, who's also a Protestant pastor, believes this convention will help shatter that idea.
I'm a witness, an actual living witness, along with so many millions of others, that our faith is part of what drives us to the Democratic Party. The values of community, of sharing, of caring for one another, and for lifting up every boat, even those that are stuck at the bottom and those that are coasting along the top.
On Sunday, the convention organized an interfaith gathering where representatives of several religions read from sacred texts and offered prayers and blessings. And there was some rousing gospel music. During the week, the Democratic Faith Council held special panel discussions about religion and politics. Reverend Derek Harkins of Union Theological Seminary in New York led faith outreach for the DNC in the last election. He says Democrats are continuing to do a better job connecting with their religious constituencies.
There are particular relationships that we really do need to foster and care for in terms of with faith communities and faith leaders. And I think we're on the way, but I think there's definitely room for added emphasis.
As is traditional for both parties, every session of the convention opened and closed with prayers from a diverse range of religious leaders. During his speech on Wednesday, vice presidential nominee Tim Kaine hit many spiritual themes and spoke extensively about the importance of his Roman Catholic faith and his missionary work in Central America. Many faith-based delegates were pleased by his addition to the ticket.
He's someone that has really made his message be clear about how, as a Catholic, he understands the political process and understands that that has guided him into politics.
Clinton is a lifelong United Methodist. In her acceptance speech Thursday, she quoted a well-known Methodist motto she often repeats.
Do all the good you can for all the people you can in all the ways you can as long as ever you can.
Many Democrats have been urging Clinton to talk more about her faith.
Hillary Clinton is a great Methodist, and they don't talk about it. I mean, that's the irony of this. She really does live her faith, but her faith, even more than a Catholic, calls her to be quiet, reserved, but to be integrated in it. And I think we see it in her values, and that's what we've got to look at.
One of Clinton's closest spiritual influences is senior advisor Bernd Strider, a Baptist. He shares what he calls a daily time of devotion and reflection with her. They focus on a passage from the Bible or a spiritual book.
It can be daunting at times. Her questions are always deep, if she has one, but so are her insights.
Strider says he sees Clinton's faith reflected in her care for others. He told me about one recent campaign stop where some veterans' families approached the candidate for help. She directed Strider to make a file and then kept following up.
I'm trying to elect a president, and she has me doing casework. And that's the president that'll be sitting in the Oval Office. She has the capacity to work on the big pictures and see the personal needs. She lives her public life in the macro and the micro.
Americans have long said they want a president with strong religious beliefs, but the numbers are dropping. In a new Pew survey, 62% of all Americans said it is important to them, but that's down from more than 70% in 2008. And among Democrats, just over half said it's important to them.
People who describe themselves as having no particular religion make up one of the fastest growing Democratic voting blocs. In the last election, about one in four Obama voters was religiously unaffiliated. It can be tricky reaching out to those voters while not alienating religious blocs. Many here said the faith community cannot be taken for granted.
Mobilization is key, critical, and crucial. And mobilization oftentimes happens incredibly well as it emanates out of faith communities. Certainly in the Black church, you know, oftentimes the nexus of a neighborhood, of a community. So mobilizing people to get to the polls so that they can exercise their franchise, we've got to make that a priority this time around. The stakes are just so high.
While religious liberals praise the Progressive Party platform adopted here, some Democratic delegates expressed concern that other positions on social issues were not recognized. The group Democrats for Life is urging its party to be more inclusive of what it calls a whole life view that opposes both the death penalty and abortion.
It's time for urban Christians, it's time for Christians in general to say, hold up, we're part of this party too. You need to hear how we feel on this issue and really give us your ear.
Other groups also feel some tension in the party. Former President Bill Clinton tried to reach out to Muslims in his speech, but ended up insulting some when he said, quote, if you're a Muslim and you love America and freedom and you hate terror, we want you. Some Muslims felt that implied their love of America and opposition to terror should be questioned. First-time Florida delegate Ghazala Salam admits her party still has some work to do.
They need to speak to us like we are Americans, like we are part of this. And I think sometimes politicians speak to what is the popular rhetoric or respond to the popular rhetoric, and that's not always the right thing to do.
Salam says Donald Trump's rhetoric, including his calls for a ban on Muslims traveling to the U.S., has mobilized a record number of Muslims to get involved in politics.
2016 is a wake-up call for the Muslim community who has been here for so long, to say we need to be more proactive so that next election cycle or the next major candidate that comes along does not use us, you know, in the way that we're being used to create hate and fear.
At an interfaith prayer breakfast, participants discussed how to challenge anti-Muslim rhetoric and to work for the common good. Throughout the campaign season, many religious groups have been raising alarms about the level of negative rhetoric by candidates and their supporters.
We're at a point where, I'll just say it, one of the candidates, Donald Trump, is running a campaign of division where he's actively trying to exploit the divisions within the country and tapping into people's fear.
The group Christian Democrats of America has launched a new campaign called Christians Against Trump, Christians Against Hate.
Hate is not a Christian value, and if you are a Christian, then your commitment should be about what did Jesus preach, and it was love. It was compassion, and it was love for everybody. It was a message of tolerance and of accepting people.
The American Jewish Committee was one of several groups that held issue briefings at both conventions. The AJC's Jason Isaacson said he worries about the international impact of the current negative political atmosphere.
It sends a terrible message to our own people and a terrible message around the world of what America stands for. We lead not just because of our military strength, but because of our moral example.
Still, many religious leaders here urged Americans not to give up on hope.
As long as we think the current reality is the given, we won't be able to move forward. So I'm encouraging people to stand up, be the leaders we're waiting for, and work for change.
And whether Americans ultimately see the Clinton-Kaine ticket as an agent for positive change may help determine the outcome in November. I'm Kim Lawton in Philadelphia.
In other news, Pope Francis is in Poland to celebrate World Youth Day. After arriving, Francis urged Poles to show more compassion toward migrants. Poland has forcefully rejected Europe's plan to welcome migrants and refugees. The pontiff also visited the Jasna Góra Monastery, where an iconic image of the so-called Black Madonna is displayed. During an outdoor mass in front of some 100,000 people, Francis tripped and fell, but quickly recovered. The Pope also visited the former death camp Auschwitz and asked that the Lord give him the grace to cry. Some 350,000 youths from 187 countries are participating in the event, including more than 30,000 from the U.S. France is recovering from yet another terrorist attack. Clergy and government officials were among those who gathered at the Cathedral of Notre Dame for a mass honoring the Reverend Jacques Hamel, the French priest killed by two young men. The terrorists attacked Hamel as he celebrated Mass earlier this week in a small town church near Paris. He was 85 years old. The men had pledged allegiance to ISIS and were known to authorities. One attacker had been released from prison over the objections of prosecutors and was wearing a police-issued electronic bracelet at the time of the attack. A parishioner was also severely wounded. Pope Francis was quick to condemn the barbaric killing of a priest. Russia and the Syrian government say they have launched a large-scale humanitarian operation in Syria to try to help those trapped in Aleppo. Three humanitarian corridors are being opened to aid civilians and for, quote, fighters wishing to lay down their arms. Officials said medical posts and food handouts would be provided along the three corridors. Meanwhile, government airstrikes hit at least five medical facilities in northern Aleppo. Five people were killed, among them an infant. According to Physicians for Human Rights, 750 medical personnel have been killed in Syria in the last 6 years, 698 of whom were killed in attacks carried out by government forces and their Russian allies. A prominent Muslim institution, Al-Azhar in Egypt, has rejected a new government program aimed at standardizing Friday sermons. The government body in Egypt that regulates mosques and houses of worship launched the Standardized Sermon Initiative in an effort to try to filter out Muslim extremism. According to the plan, every week state-hired scholars will write the sermons. Scholars at Al-Azhar, however, say giving clerics pre-written sermons would limit religious freedom. A new report by a leading Israeli human rights group says Israel has demolished more Palestinian homes in the West Bank this year than it did nearly every other year in the last decade. According to the report, Israeli authorities demolished 168 homes in the West Bank from January to the end of June. This year's demolitions have left 740 Palestinians homeless. Israel says much of the Palestinian building in the area is illegal. The White House announced that it is expanding its refugee program for Central Americans fleeing violence. Now the program will not only allow unaccompanied Central American children to enter the U.S. as refugees, but family members as well. Officials say since the influx from Central America began, 600 people, including 267 children, have entered the U.S. as refugees. Advocates for immigrants and refugees argue the Obama administration has been too slow to respond to the refugee crisis at the southern border. Muslims from around the country gathered on the National Mall in front of the Capitol this past week to speak against terrorism and discrimination. Christians, Jews, and other faith groups joined in the effort. Evangelical minister Tim LaHaye, co-author of the best-selling Left Behind series describing the apocalypse, died on Monday. He was 90 years old. The Left Behind series was published between 1995 and 2007 in 16 volumes and sold more than 65 million copies. LaHaye based the series on the books of Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Revelation. In the late 1970s, LaHaye promoted Pat Robertson's Christian Coalition and the Reverend Jerry Falwell's Moral Majority. LaHaye was also a harsh critic of Catholicism, calling it pseudo-Christian. This year is the 100th birthday of the national parks, and Lucky Severson visited a couple of them, beginning with a worship service at Grand Teton with breathtaking wilderness views. Next door in Yellowstone, grizzly bears, bison, and a lot of photographers.
The Chapel of the Transfiguration is one of the treasures of Grand Teton National Park. For millions of people from all over creation, this is what the Irish call a thin space, where the physical and spiritual worlds intersect. It's a Sunday morning. Somehow, Amazing Grace could not be more appropriate. Amazing how many people come to places like this to find themselves, away from the bustle, no need for a soundtrack, no need for a man-made edifice. There are 58 national parks. Yellowstone is the granddaddy of them all. Dan Wenk is the superintendent. They come to Yellowstone for the 10,000 thermal pots and especially for Old Faithful, but usually they come back for the animals. Many visitors seem to have lost their fear of wild things, like black bears, until the bears start running in their direction. It's conflicts like these between the animals and humans that give park rangers nightmares. The bigger worry, though, is the press of the crowds. There were over 4 million visitors last year. Superintendent Wenk says one solution may require that visitors make reservations in order to visit the park. Another, already in place in some parks, allows entry only aboard park buses. There's probably not a soul alive who knows Yellowstone better than photographer Tom Murphy. His work has appeared in National Geographic and the New York Times. He figures he spent 3,500 days taking pictures of Yellowstone and its critters. You will find very few people devoted, some might say crazy, enough to crisscross an area bigger than Rhode Island and Delaware in the middle of the winter. Tom stresses patience and serendipity. He stood in minus 35 degree temperatures for 3 hours to get this shot. Caroline Bird fell in love with Yellowstone the first minute she came here. Now she's the executive director of the Greater Yellowstone Coalition. The problem, as she sees it, is that the boundaries of Yellowstone were drawn up to meet the demands of man rather than the demands of nature. In other words, grizzly bears can't read boundary markers. She particularly loves the grizzlies. And because of climate change, grizzlies are venturing more into human spaces, and that can be both dangerous and rewarding. Rewarding to those who catch a glimpse of animals in the wild. When we found Jim Smith, he'd been here a month, his first visit. He is transfixed by the wildlife he found here. He says the experience for him has been transformative. For George and Jennifer Dibble, Yellowstone is a classroom for their three kids to learn that God is still out there. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Yellowstone National Park.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you, Stacey Francis, who appeared on the TV show The X Factor, singing gospel music at the DNC Interfaith Gathering.
Let me hear you say amen again. Amen, amen. Amen, amen. Amen.
Next time, 20 years after her death, Mother Teresa of Calcutta is being made a saint. Few people knew she suffered a deep spiritual darkness during her lifetime.
Oh, I was shocked. Of all people, you would say, well, Mother Teresa obviously has a very intimate relationship with God in her prayer, and we found out it was just the opposite.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.